Team 1. Breach, breach, breach.
You're listening to Breach Your Mind. Hey guys, welcome back. So this week, I decided to give you another little anecdote from my life. Share a little story about me that kind of helped shape me. This one is obviously one that has already occurred because I'm not quite good enough to tell the future yet. But this is one that, while it's in the past, it's not a great deal in the past. It's actually a story that my wife likes to hear me tell people. Hopefully I can convey it to you with the same animations and comedic value that it's conveyed when I'm in person. If not, I tried. So back when I first started in my profession, I was already kind of a big guy. You know, height wise, I'm 6'2", and I've always had broad shoulders. But I went through some things. We've discussed a little bit of it, but I went through some things, and because I got sedentary, I wound up putting on extra weight. So when I got into my current profession, I come in probably around 260 pounds. Well, there's a lot of things that they teach you when you're going through the academy and getting ready to join this job. A lot about the law, how to handle calls, how to handle people, how to, do a bunch of different techniques, a lot of skills. But one of the things that they don't teach you, and probably should, is about what the job can do to you. Not how you can affect it, how the job can affect you. And obviously, just like any public safety job, the calls you go on and the things you see, all that stuff kind of gets imprinted in your brain. And, how you deal with it, it's how you deal with it. And they don't really teach you a lot about that. But there's another side of it that, they don't really cover. At least as far as my position goes. I imagine it's probably the same for others, but so my career has revolved around being on patrol. And in that, it's just like it sounds. For the vast majority of my shift, I'm in a vehicle driving around particular areas, looking for things, seeing what's going on, riding calls, so on and so forth. But the vast majority of my job, I'm in a seated position and, I'm driving. Along with that, there's a lot of fast food. There's a lot of bad food. There's a lot of energy drinks and high calorie sodas and sugar and so on and so forth. And all of that, along with a very sedentary life, winds up taking a toll on you. And in my particular case, it took a hefty toll on me. Sheer genetics, I'm a big guy. 6'2", broad shoulders. When I got into the career, I was probably tipping the scales around 250, 260, mid-20s. And not, I guess clinically, it would be obese. But in my case, I didn't believe I was obese. But I was a heavy guy. So that's how it was when I started this job. And then a few years down the road from starting the job, I packed on a little bit more weight, spent a lot more time in the car, a lot more time riding. It's nothing to go 3,000-4,000 miles a month, driving around our particular area. And that's what happened to me. I was doing a bunch of driving, and when I was off, I was resting or, whatever, I wasn't doing anything. So I wound up ballooning up to a whopping 313 pounds. I was 6'2 and 313 pounds And it got to a point where the simple act of bending over and trying to tie my boots would be painful. I would have to hold my breath just to tie my boots. On top of that, I was going to the doc, and the doc was telling me, you know, how my blood pressure was through the roof, and, you know, it's probably because of my weight. So it was around, you know, around 3 or so years in, I finally decided, you know what, maybe I need to make a change. And I was tired of being big. I was tired of being morbidly obese and feeling the effects from it. Hopefully this works. I've never done this before, but I'm going to try to give you guys kind of an image of what I looked like back then. See if this works here. For those of you that aren't really listening to the podcast, not watching the video, I do apologize for you, but those of you that know me, you've probably seen one of these pictures before. So there you go. That is me, as you can see, in 2009. That's me right there. I'm the big guy. Can't tell you exactly how much I weighed at that point, but that was me. That was probably around the time that, you know, I decided it was time to change some things up. So I wound up going to a doctor and getting on a diet plan, you know, calorie counting, and I was in the gym every day. You know, 2 hours a day, nothing but cardio. And I did that for about 4 months. And in 4 months, I dropped almost 100 pounds. So I went from 313 pounds to 227 pounds in right around 4 months, give or take a little. So I dropped, you know, at least in my understanding of things, I dropped a lot of weight in a very short period of time. Well, in all of that, I didn't take into consideration how that aspect was going to affect me. You know, I felt like I was a tough guy. I mean, I had to be some kind of tough as far as strength goes, because I had to carry all that weight around. And it wasn't until the end of my dieting that I changed up my workout routine, going from nothing but straight 2 hours of cardio to doing a little bit of cardio and doing more weight training. So it wasn't toward the end there, because, you know, once I lost all that weight, I had to build that muscle back up. But mind you, I still had that mindset of being a big guy. You know, I was still a big guy. You know, most of the people I'm around, I'm taller than. My shoulders are bigger than. I outweigh them. And that's pretty much how most of my later teenage years and early adulthood, now obviously my adulthood, have gone. I've been the big guy. And that mindset kind of got stuck there. So, you know, fast forward a little bit, I've dropped all this weight and I'm 227 pounds. You know, I'm feeling good about myself. I'm breathing better, sleeping better. You know, everything's kind of going good for me. And we get a call. I'm on the road on patrol and we get a call. And the call goes out that a victim is called in and said, it's the grandmother, is called in and said the children's mother has said that her kids were going to meet Jesus tonight. Before I go any further, let me preface this with, you know, I've said it plenty of times before, and I don't want anybody to get it misconstrued. Mental illness is not a joke. And what this family was going through, what this person was going through, it's not funny. You know, it was traumatic for them. It was traumatic for what they were going through. It's traumatic for everybody in that home. So that's not what this story is focusing on. The story is focusing on it from my perspective. So with that being said, like I said, I'm riding around on the road and I get the call, you know, mama said that her kids are going to meet Jesus tonight. Well, kids are involved, and you know, if I can do anything to stop that from happening, I'm going to. So here I go, you know, lights and siren blazing across the county, burning up the road, trying to get to this home. And when I get there, there's a guy standing in the yard waving me down. I whip in there. Now, mind you, in calls where it can involve violence or, you know, anything dangerous, you know, typical protocol, is we wait for more people. You know, we don't know how many we're going to need to accomplish something, but we like to know that we got as many as we can get there. I was cocky. I was extremely cocky about it. You know, I had no way in the world I was going to let these kids get hurt. So here I go. You know, I just barrel right into the driveway, get on the radio to dispatch, hey, I'm on scene. I jump out of the car, and the guy that was in the yard was, you know, motioning me toward the house. Hey, she's over here. She's lost her mind, yada, yada, yada. So I rush into the house. And as soon as I get into the house and look at this person, I immediately knew that this one was going to go a different way. You know, it wasn't going to be just as easy as walking in and having a conversation. And I say that because as soon as I walked in the door and looked at the area where this person was, they were standing in a door jam or standing in a doorway, and the door was completely gone. Grandma had taken the kids whenever the children's mother said what she said. Grandma had taken the kids, went into her bedroom, locked and secured the door. And mom come over there and busted the door open. Now, when I say she busted the door open, that's putting it lightly. This woman hit the door so hard, she literally took the door jamb and everything. So the door and everything that's attached to the door was now inside the room. And she's standing half in the room and half in the area where I'm at. So while I don't work for a federal agency or one of the ABC agencies, I do know how to pick up on some context clues. And while I understand the construction of that particular home, you know, was not the same as a regular stick-built home, I do also know that, well, those doors don't just fall off real easily. At least not in one that's, you know, even remotely somewhat maintained. So I look over there and I see this female. You know, she's vastly smaller than me. Like I said, I'm 6'2", 227 pounds, feeling good about myself, been in the gym. And I look over and here's this woman. She's 5'6", 5'9", somewhere in there, somewhere in the range of 140, 160 pounds. You know, she doesn't stand a chance against me. I'm a big guy. If she wants to try to go after those kids and she's got to go up against me, she got a tall tree to climb because it's not going to be easy for her. And this is my mindset walking into that situation. So she sees me finally and she just basically looks right through me. I might as well have not even been there because as soon as she looked at me, her eyes were just dead inside and she was looking straight through me. You know, again, context clues. You know, most people, when they see you, they acknowledge you something. I got nothing from her. You know, she looked in my direction and I wasn't even in existence. So it seemed. So I walk over there. And in our profession, especially during those times, you know, a lot of us were trained and operated off of the premise of ask, tell, make. So we'll ask you to do something, we'll tell you to do something, and then we make you do something. So we all operated off of that mindset and off of that. I say we all, the vast majority of law enforcement that I knew operated off of that principle. So I go over and, you know, I'm trying to defuse the situation. She's obviously upset. You know, I look into the room where grandma is. Grandma's got these two small children. The children are crying. You could look at the face on grandma, and grandma was terrified. And, you know, here I am, you know, standing in front of this woman. And when I'm telling you standing in front of them, like from me to my computer screen, we're talking a matter of a couple of feet is the distance between us. I'm in her personal space. And I'm looking at this woman and, you know, I said, hey, you know, I'm you know, sure I was with the sheriff's office. We're going to, so why don't we go ahead and go in here to the living room and sit on the couch and talk about what's going on. This woman looks me up and down, and then dead looks at me in my eyes and says, I'm not afraid of you. You can't touch me. Physically, I know she is wrong. She's a couple of feet away. I got a pretty good span on me. Yeah, I can touch you. But she's looking at me and she's, you can't touch me. So I look at her and, you know, I've already asked her if we could go into the living room. I said, all right, look, go into the living room so we can sit and talk about what's going on. Again, she just sits there and stares at me. I'm not afraid of you. Well, I mean, I don't go around trying to make people afraid of me, and I wasn't hoping she would be afraid of me, but I kind of hoped that she would look at my size and realize that a fight with me is not going to, it's not going to end well. You know, it's not going to go in her favor. But that's not what I got. You know, instead what I got is this woman looking at me with these cold eyes telling me she's not afraid of me. You know, I was essentially, what I took from her words and her demeanor and her actions was there was nothing I could do. She was going to do what she wanted to do, and there was nothing I could do about it. So like I said, you know, I've asked, I've told, now it's time to make. So I tell her again, all right, we're going into the living room and we're going to talk about what's going on. And notice the change in the words. We are going into the living room to talk about this. So as I said that, you know, I reach in for her wrist. I'm going to grab her by both of her wrists and, you know, we're going to start walking into the living room. Guys, I can't really think of the best way to describe it right now, other than as soon as I grabbed her wrists, there was a fight bell that went off in her head that I was not privy to. As soon as I reached out and grabbed her wrist, inside her head, all she heard was, ding, time to fight. And that's exactly what she did. I grabbed a hold of her wrist, and she immediately started flailing her arms above her head, and me, not expecting that this is going to happen, I'm clenching onto her wrist, trying to hold on with everything that I can, because now I've obviously upset her even more so. She's already kicked the door off the door jamb, or kicked the door jamb out of the wall. And now I've got a hold of her. And the only thing I can think is, don't let go of her. Because if I let go of her, she's got use of her hands, and God only knows what she's going to do with that. So while I've got a hold of her, you know, I decide that since she's not going to do what I've asked her and suggested and now told her, you know, I'm just going to start trying to drag her in there. Well, that didn't work out so easily either. I'm holding on to her wrist, and I start trying to drag her, and she's fighting against me, and we're only typically making it a couple inches every time I give it a try. We wind up bumping into some, you know, 3 foot tall accent table that's sitting there in the little area. Knock it over, the stuff on it goes all over the place. And I finally get her to, I guess you'd say, the den. And to kind of give you an idea of what I was looking at, this is a double wide trailer, and all I can see is OSB plywood floor. Okay. For those of you that don't know, plywood is, you know, mostly used for flooring. Or I say mostly, it's used for flooring, it's used for roofing. But especially in homes, plywood is in mobile homes, plywood is used for the floor. And OSB is just a type of plywood. It's like a bunch of wood chips that have been glued and pressed together. And that's what the flooring was in here. They had removed all the carpeting, any laminate that was in there. They'd already pulled all that up. And so it was nothing but this plywood floor. And typically OSB has two different sides. One side is nice and smooth, and the other side is more textured. This one was textured. The textured side was up on this. So as I get her into the den area and we're struggling, I finally managed to get her off balance, and down we go. You know, we go down to the floor. And fortunately for me, I was able to get her positioned so that when she landed on her stomach, and she wound up landing with her hands underneath her with me on her back. Now, like I thought, I would hope you would think that, well, I've got the upper hand here. She's on her stomach, she's got her hands underneath her, you know, big 227-pound guy laying on her back. You know, hey, that's nothing but advantage right there. Advantage me. Well, that weren't the case, because as we hit the floor and I sit up and I kind of get up, slide up onto her back to start trying to get her hands behind her, this woman with my 227 pounds on her back does a full push-up from the grounded position with her hands underneath her. Just straight up, she does a full push-up. if you guys aren't physically fit, go ahead and hop down and knock out just one push-up without any weight on your back. Now imagine knocking out a push-up with 227 pounds of dead weight on your back. That would be me. So I'm on this woman's back and I'm pretty high up. I'm, you know, above mid-back, and she does this push-up. Of course, I'm on her back for the ride, and complete amazement at this point. One, I wasn't expecting to have, you know, grabbed onto a cat that I was trying to baptize. Didn't expect her to be as wily as she was. And I definitely didn't expect that once I got her to the ground and I was on her, that she would be able to pick up her own body weight plus mine. Again, 5'6", 5'9", 140, 160 pounds, somewhere in that area. You know, while she may be average or above average for the woman's stature, she was small compared to me. There's no reason whatsoever this woman should have been able to do a push-up with me sitting on her back, at least not looking at her physically. So she does this push-up on her back, and I lay back down on her back, and I'm trying to get her arms out from under, and she finally collapses back down to the plywood floor. So now we're on the floor, and I'm trying to wrestle her arms out. I've got my hand on her back, my right hand on her back. I've got her left arm, and I'm pulling on her left arm, trying to get it to come up from underneath her, and nothing's happening. Like, I'm tugging on her. She's doing nothing but thrashing. I keep feeling her feet hit me in the back because she's kicking me in the back while I'm sitting on her back. And it's at this point that I've realized that I put myself in a bad situation. Because what happened next, or during this time, was I feel a tug on my collar, on the edge of my shirt. And what that was her brother. The guy that waved me into the yard and told me she'd done gone crazy. He was now reaching in, grabbing on my shirt and pulling on my shirt, saying, please don't hurt her. Now, I'm obviously not trying to hurt her. You know, she's trying to hurt her kids, and they can't control her, so they called us. I'm trying to control her. But all this guy sees is my big body on her little body and us wrestling. So he reaches in and grabs on my shoulder. And in our profession, that's a bad situation to be in. You never want to be on the ground and have other potential assailants, you know, standing around you, you know, not if you can help it. And of course, I had to be all, you know, John Wayne about it and just go rushing right in because I'm going to save the world, save the day. And now I've put myself in this position. So her brother reaches in, he grabs a hold of my shirt and he starts pulling on my shirt. He says, you know, please don't hurt her. Of course, I have no idea what his intentions are at this point because my attention has been focused on this wet cat that's in front of me, and he's pulling on me. So I did the only thing I knew to do, which was swing my arm back up towards him to get his hand off of me and then yell at him, you know, to stay off of me and stay back. Well, he backs up. I get back to work trying to get her under control, and I'm starting to pull on her wrist or pull on her arm, and you know, while I'm sitting there pulling on her arm, all of a sudden I feel something touch the inside of my wrist, my left wrist. And when I looked down, it was her lips. She had turned her head and was trying to bite me on my arm now. The only thing I knew to do was to put my forearm across her head and press her head into the floor to try to keep her from biting me. When I did that, I was able to gain a little bit of space. Now, mind you, the last thing that my dispatch or any of my guys had heard was me say that I was on scene. They had no idea what else was going on. I had no idea if anybody else was coming. I presumed they were, but I didn't know. So the last thing they heard from me was, you know, I was on scene. They had no idea what was going on right now. And here I am and struggling with this woman. You know, I got her brother reaching in on me, and I don't know what else is going to happen. She tries to bite me. I get her mouth on me and get her head down to the floor. And it was at that time I realized, hey, you know what? I need to let somebody else know that I could use another hand or two. So I sit up, and just as I push the button on my microphone, she lets out this low bass filled growl that winds up getting heard through the radio as I'm trying to talk. Just as I keyed up to say, hey, she's fighting me, all they hear is just coming from her. you know, not a woman's voice, not the tone and pitch of a woman's voice when it's yelling or screaming, a bass-filled voice just grunting and growling as I'm trying to talk over the radio. So you hear my voice and then that noise back behind it. Notified dispatch, that's what's going on, and I get back to work. You know, I'm doing everything I can here to try to get her under control. I finally managed to get her wrist out from under, her left wrist out from under her, and I roll that one up to her back, and I get my handcuffs secured on that one, and I wind up using a leg to kind of wedge that arm into position so she can't pull it back out. You know, it's up back behind her head. There's nothing she can do with that arm at this point. So now I can focus on the other arm. So again, I put my hand on her back and I pull in on her right arm. And guys, just absolutely nothing was working. I couldn't pull it out. I couldn't wrench it out. There was no lifting her up sideways a little bit to get weight off of it. There was nothing. Everything I was trying, I wasn't getting her hand loose. This woman was fighting me with everything she had. And it, for all intents and purposes, she was winning. This small frame woman was kicking my butt right here in the middle of this double wide trailer. Couldn't get her arm out, so I finally decided, you know what? Nothing else is working. I'm just going to start yanking on this thing until something happens. Whatever happens, happens, but I've got to get this hand out. I've got to get her a set of handcuffs because then I'll have her under control. So I'm sitting here and I'm yanking on her arm, pulling as hard as I can. And finally, her arm pops out. And she rolls her arm comes out. I managed to roll her arm up and I get the handcuff on there. I finally got the handcuffs on her. She is secure. Situation is calm. I have got it under control. I sit up, take a couple of breaths because I wasn't prepared for what had just happened. Take a couple of breaths and I stand up. I'm like, all right, I need to get her up and get her outside. She obviously needs to go to the hospital because something's not right. This isn't a matter of this woman has trained more than me or been lifting weights more than me or, you know, is super good at CrossFit or any of these other little fitness things. It wasn't about that. Something wasn't right. This woman had superhuman strength, it seemed to me, and it was time to get something checked out. So at this point, I'm very much concerned about her mental well-being than I am anything. Aside from the fact that I'm getting my butt kicked by this woman right there in the middle of their double-wide trailer. I'm on her back. I get my breath about me. Only takes a second or so. And then I stand up. And typically, once I've got the handcuffs on somebody, that's it. Stand them up, cooperative, get them out there to the car, take them off where we got to take them. Well, I stand up and I reach down and grab this woman. And as I start to try to roll her over and stand her up, she comes alive again. And I couldn't freaking believe it. Because we had just done all that. In my opinion, I'm probably more physically prepared for what's going on than she was, but I'm already gassed and she's ready for round two. And I wasn't. As soon as I stand her up, she gets her feet underneath her and she takes off trying to run down the hallway of this double wide trailer. Fortunately, I was able to keep my hands on her and I'm pulling back against her hands. And guys, I don't know if you've ever had both of your arms behind your back. But when somebody's pulling on your arms and they're behind your back, that's not comfortable. This didn't faze her. Me pulling on her arms, trying to keep her from running off, did not faze her one bit. So here she goes, trying to tear off, running down the hall. Nothing's working. So I finally use a technique that I've used a couple times before. And I wound up getting my arm between her wrists and her back. And I put my hand up there, neck on the side of her neck, put my fingers on her face. And it was like driving a horse at this point. As soon as I took and pushed my hand to turn her head to the right, her body immediately followed. As soon as her head turned, any of you guys that ride horses, you know, as you're holding on to the reins, as soon as you pull one way or the other and pull that horse's head one way, the horse is gonna go where its head goes. Well, that's exactly what happened here. I pushed her head to the right, now I'm steering her. And this is a positive thing because to the right is where the front door of the residence is. I'm getting her away from the kids. We're getting close to where the car is. All right, we've got some good modem here, or motivation here. We've got some good momentum. We're almost done with this. So as she gets turned, we start going toward the door. I'm now behind her pushing. And the only thing I could think is, man, as soon as I get to that door, we're done. I've got it handled. We get all the way up to the door, and just as we get to the door frame, she throws her leg up and catches the door jamb and stops us both dead cold in our tracks. Stops us dead cold. Now, imagine having somebody push you forward, how difficult it is to keep that from happening. Now, she throws her legs up, it catches the door jamb, and boom, it was like hitting a wall. I immediately crammed up against her, and I'm like, oh my God, you've got to be kidding me. So I pull her back, I shove her forward again, and boom, she stops us again. Pull her back, shove her forward again, boom, stops us again. Guys, I had no idea what to do. You know, there's no reason as to why this woman should have been able to best me at everything I tried. Physically speaking, there's no logical reason as to why she should have been able to best me when it comes to strength. Here I've tried, you know, 2, 3, 4 times now to get her out that door, and she stopped us dead cold every single time. So I do the only thing that I know to do. We need to go out the door backwards. I need to keep her feet, you know, keep her off of her feet so that she can't do that again. So I pull her backwards, and just as I pull her backwards, I kind of spin her around and snatch her back to me. Now I've rocked her back on her hips. She's gone around, spun, I yank her to me. She's now on her hip, or on heels. As soon as she's on her heels, I take off for the door. Here I am, head full of steam, making it to the door. We get to the door again, and guys, I'm not shitting you. As soon as we get to the door, that leg comes out, and she hooks the door, and we stop dead in our tracks again. Stop dead in our tracks again. And literally all she did was throw her left leg out, bend it at the knee, and catch the door. I know that, you know, we all have the propensity to be weak. I know I have the propensity to be weak. But I wasn't weak. You know, I worked out. I was a tough guy. This woman has now stopped me in every endeavor to try to get her under control and get her secured. She has stopped me every single step of the way. And now here I am, you know, battling her yet again, trying to get her out this door. So I push her back in the door. I pull her again, and she hooks the door again. Guys, this whole time, I'm just like, are you freaking kidding me? All I want to do is get her secured. I am so tired of this. This is ridiculous. I'm out of breath. I feel like I have tried to run 3 miles wearing all my gear. I am just smoked at this point. So I push her back in, and I give her just the hardest run I possibly can to go toward this door. I cross through the door, and just as she gets to the door, I can only assume her timing was off, because there's no reason that, you know, being, you know, we'd already been stopped like 6 times at this point. There's no reason we would have gone through had she had her timing right. But she threw that leg out, the door jam catches it, and her leg flies back right in front of her, and we keep on going. And I can't tell you how excited I was. I can't tell you how excited I was that now I've got nothing but momentum. There is absolutely no way she's stopping me at this point. I've just broken her last defense on keeping me from getting her outside. So I bust through that door. We get onto the porch. I'm headed for the screen door. And just as I was coming to the screen door on this covered porch, set of headlights pull up. It's my sergeant. You know, he's heard everything that's going on the radio. He's there to help. You know, I don't know where he was what felt like 10 minutes earlier. But yeah, we'd gone at it for a minute, and you know, we're on the downside of it now, guy. So as he gets out, starts coming up the yard, all he sees is me come out, run across this screened-in porch, hit the screen door with my shoulder, jump off and it wasn't but 2 small steps. I jump off, clearing the steps, dragging her behind me. Her feet just down the steps to the ground. As he stops and goes, hey, I go rushing past him, just dragging her feet through the dirt all the way to my car, open up the car door, put her inside the car, get my hobble restraint out, throw it around the ankles, secure the hobble. And guys, as soon as I shut this door, it's like somebody reached in and turned off a light switch. When I put her in this car, she's, you know, thrashing and growling and screaming at me. And as soon as I shut that door, it's like somebody turned the light switch off, because she goes from screaming and hollering to just stone cold. No movement, no sounds, nothing. Sitting straight up, hands behind her back, feet directly in front of her, not saying a word. Head looking straight ahead, just not uttering one word. I got that door shut, and I'm sitting over there, my hands on my knees. Sarge comes up, and he's like, what's going on? Sarge, she was trying to get to her kids, saying she was going to meet Jesus. She wouldn't listen. I've just been fighting her this whole time. I finally got her out the door just as you got here. He said, all right, well, go ahead and get her on up to the hospital. I'll go in here and talk to the family. Okay. Yeah, give me a minute. Need to breathe. A little lightheaded, a little woozy. So I finally get my stuff about me, and I get in the seat, drive her up to the hospital. And guys, she doesn't utter the first word the whole way there. Every time I check the mirror, she's just sitting there staring straight ahead, which if you've never seen that, it's a little creepy. You know, I just got done fighting this demon inside the house, and now she's in the back seat just staring straight ahead, not saying anything. That's a little creepy. So we get up there, and as was protocol, we take them to the ER, go inside, inform them there for a mental health evaluation, and get in there, get her seated. And one of the nurses that was working at the time, she's one of my favorite nurses that I've had. She had a English accent, really no filter on her. You know, she didn't tell you what you wanted to hear. She said the things that most of us think but don't say, and she did it in a professional setting. So that was kind of awesome. So as soon as she walks through the door, I'm like, oh, thank God, Mel's here. I'm good to go. So I'm sitting there. Now, mind you, we've been wrestling on this OSB plywood floor. My boots are a wreck. My knees are on fire from where this polyester has sat here and just ground against my skin between the plywood floor. You know, my knees are on fire. I can tell that there's some skin missing from them. My pants look like a complete wreck because the polyester heated up and started to get shiny from where it was melting. And duty belts twisted sideways. I mean, it was a full-on struggle match with her. And I'm bearing, you know, the evidence of it. So we're sitting there, and you know, the nurse walks in, and she goes, okay, what are we here for? I look at the nurse, and I look over at her, and then I look at the nurse, and I look back over at her. And then the woman looks at the nurse, and she goes, I don't know, ask him. I'm sorry, what? You don't know why we're here, and she needs to ask me. Okay. Mind you, I done fought with this woman. I done been fighting with this woman. She's done had a whole slew of things happen to this point, and she looks at this nurse, I don't know, ask him. Of course, now, here I am, you know, completely baffled that she would say that. I mean, she literally could have said just about anything else, and I would have been good to go. But I don't know, ask him. Nah, I play it. I don't work. I'm looking at her. I look at the nurse. I look at her, and you know, just kind of back and forth with my eyes, you know, big and wide. And the nurse looks at me, and I went, "She just got done fighting me." This woman looks at me in my eyes and goes, "No, I didn't. I'm sorry. What? No, she didn't." I've got shiny polyester pants on my knee. I'm missing probably a nice little quarter size patch of skin on both knees. My duty belt sideways. My boots look like I drug them down a concrete. And no, you didn't. I guess I just showed up to work like that. I showed up with scuffed up boots, burnt up knees, messed up pants, and a twisted duty belt. Nah, no, I don't think so. Nah. I'm again in amazement. My eyes are wide open. I look at the nurse. I went, okay, yes, we did. She just got done fighting me. We got called to the house because she said her kids are going to meet Jesus. No, I didn't. Ugh. Nurse looks at me. She sees things aren't going well for me. I'm pretty much over there about to, you know, pop a vessel in my brain. She goes, I think we've got it all. You can go ahead and go. We'll get the team to come in and take a look at her. I'm like, okay, well, best of luck to you, ma'am. I walk out and I leave and I go on about my day. A few hours later, Sarge calls me. Hey, Ava got her completed over there at the hospital. They're going to put her in a facility. I want you to go ahead and pick her up and run her on up there. I know that I should have been okay with it, but I kind of had a problem with that because I didn't know when crazy was going to flip the batshit switch again, and I didn't want to be party to it anymore. I'd had my fun for the night. I was done with it. But Sarge is the one asking, so yes, sir, on the way. I got it. Get in the car, I ride over there, and you know, I wind up getting her and transport her to the facility just fine. Everything worked out fine, but you know, it, still, I was real happy about that because I got lucky. I got lucky. I got lucky at the house. I got lucky on the ride there. I got lucky, you know, on the ride to the facility, because I bore witness at this point to what she's capable of, and I did not walk into that situation prepared that time, and I wasn't letting her get the best of me again. So, yeah. That was a real quick life lesson in not being too confident in yourself or overconfident in yourself, and definitely not to underestimate the ability of your opponent. You know, whether or not it was a physical thing, a technique thing, whatever. You know, there was definitely a moment there where I underestimated her, and it cost me. You know, I paid for that one. I was the one with the bumps and the bruises that come away from that one, not her. So yeah, there you go. A little story on how I learned not to underestimate people. And I will say this, that if I do have to struggle or fight with somebody, thanks to her, I would much rather it be someone my own size. I would much rather have to deal with someone my own size because they're easier. You little guys, I don't know what it is with y'all. You small frame people, y'all are wiry. Something built different about y'all. I don't know what it is, but y'all a little wiry, a little wiggly, hard to hold on to sometimes, especially when the intent is not to hurt you. Hey, you're a little difficult. So there you go, guys. That's going to be today's show, and hope you got a little chuckle out of it. Maybe through that little story you can take away a little insight for your own. That way you don't have to learn the hard way like I did. You know, I've been heard saying it before that sometimes some of the best lessons learned are the hardest learned, and that's the case for me. Hopefully you guys, if you haven't gone through something like that, hopefully this can stop you from going through it yourself. So there you go. We'll get back at it again next episode, and until then, appreciate you guys hanging out and listen to me. If you got anything, reach out, and till the next time, you guys be safe. See ya.